everyone, and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. My name is Peggy Fleur, and I'm the host of this weekly broadcast put on by Sped Homeschool, as well as the founder and CEO of Sped Homeschool. We at Sped Homeschool empower families to home educate children with learning challenges, and I encourage you to check out our website at spedhomeschool.com to learn more about the resources and support that we offer families. Each month, we focus our broadcast and blogs on a specific topic, and this month, we're focusing on public funding programs and different ways that funding happens for homeschoolers, especially with struggling learners, and then help families use them. So tonight we're going to specifically talk about the pros and cons of public funding programs with my guest, TJ Schmidt from HSLDA. So welcome, TJ, and thank you for joining us tonight to just talk about this. Because last week we talked about some scholarship programs on our broadcast. And I kind of wanted to sandwich you in the middle with these pros and cons topic, because next week we're going to actually have a panel of parents who use these programs. And I think parents need to see it in all lights. And so thank you for being on our show tonight and for just sharing the wisdom that you've gained over the years in interacting with parents who have used these programs and the state requirements for that.
Well, Peggy, it's glad to be here with you, and certainly hope we have a great conversation and looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too. And to kick it off, I would just love for you to tell our audience a little bit about HSLDA and what is HSLDA. Maybe they don't even know. And then what do you do as a staff attorney for the Homeschool Legal Defense Association?
Sure. Well, as you said, HSLDA stands for the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and it was really founded back in 1983 by two attorneys who also happened to be homeschool dads. And at that time, homeschooling was kind of clearly legal in maybe half a dozen states. And a lot of families who had made the decision to begin homeschooling their children, there was some dissatisfaction maybe with the education that their child was getting or the needed alternatives. Mm-hmm. And so they began hearing about homeschooling. But because of the status across the country of the homeschooling laws or the lack of homeschooling laws, many of these families were facing quite a bit of attack, charges of truancy. Some were even arrested, threatens that their children would be forcibly taken to school. So just a real different kind of landscape than what we see today.
Right.
And so Mike Smith and Mike Ferris, obviously the two founding attorneys, formed HSLDA. And it was really through the work of many homeschool state groups, state leaders, and HSLDA that over the next 10 years, from 1983 into the early 90s, that almost 40 states either passed homeschooling laws where they had favorable homeschool policies enacted through lobbying the state departments of education. Or, of course, there were also a number of really important cases that were won in many of those states. So that just opened up the homeschooling freedom and was kind of the foundation for what we see today. And HSLDA was really founded by these two homeschooling dads as a means for homeschooling families to join together in order to advocate for homeschooling, to fight together for the right for us to be able to teach our children at home. You know, a lot of families don't necessarily realize this, but many states at that time required you to have teacher certification in order to be able to homeschool. But thankfully, that the last state that required teacher certification, that state law was amended back in 1996, was the last time we've had that. Now, I've had the privilege of working at HSLDA for almost 20 years. I started out as a legal assistant, and I've been a state contact attorney for nearly 18 years right now. I'm currently responsible for eight states, and these states are from New York, Florida, Oklahoma, Arizona.
So there's all over the place.
And we really try to, as state contact attorneys, try to have kind of a equal load. Many states have great homeschooling laws like Oklahoma, Arizona. There's states, obviously, like New York that have kind of the worst homeschooling laws in the country. So a lot of what I do is answer legal questions, you know, help families who are dealing with problems within their homeschooling program, whether it's through their local school officials, social services, you know, really all the whole gamut, anything to do with their homeschooling program. And then most of the work that I do is really to defend the right of these parents to be able to teach their children at home, to be able to kind of fulfill the decision that they've made and be free from, you know, government interference or even attempts to prevent them from homeschooling. And I, you know, most of what I do is to try to keep them out of court. We have a litigation department. They deal with all those court cases. So anyway, that's kind of what HSLD is. We've been around since 1983 and kind of what we do as state contact attorneys.
Yeah, well, thank you for giving us that history, because there's so many new homeschoolers now that do not understand the history of homeschooling within the United States. I mean, it's such an interesting thing. And, you know, both of us know those pioneers that were, you know, threatened jail and all those things. And to hear their stories, it is just amazing. And you don't take for granted what we have. There are so many people that just think, well, we live in the United States, we homeschool. But if it wasn't for HSLDA and a lot of people on the ground in all of these states, our homeschooling freedoms that we have now would not exist. So thank you so much.
Well, and you know, my own family, it took my parents 2 years to convince the local school officials to allow us to be homeschooled in the early 80s. And so, you know, I'm really working at HSLD because of, in part, you know, the experience that my parents had. And, you know, being able to help families who are facing that opposition. And, you know, as I'm sure you know, many parents who have children with special educational needs, you know, they're often, you know, school officials kind of have a negative perception. And, you know, they say, well, you know, how can you homeschool your child? They've got special educational needs. And, you know, we're here to try to help. I know that's what you do, is to help them be able to, you know, say, yeah, I can do this.
And we tell parents often that, you know, you're going to deal with a lot more people outside of your homeschool than the typical homeschooling family. And having a membership with HSLDA is extremely important, you know, in my book, it is, because we've used you, and I have three struggling learners, and I have greatly appreciated having that confidence in being a member of your organization. So
it's our pleasure to help
as well. Definitely. I see we have quite a few viewers on with us. We have already a hello from Lisa Christina from, and she's watching on YouTube. Hi, Lisa. And so we are broadcasting right now on YouTube, Facebook, as well as Periscope on Twitter. And so if you're watching in any of those places, you can just comment in the feed. We'll see that. If you have questions, please do put those in. If you, there's something we're talking about and you want us to clarify, or if you have an additional question, let us know. We'd love to answer those questions. That's why we do this live instead of recorded. It's not always a perfect broadcast, but it's a good one. So we definitely value your participation with us. So, but I do have some questions already set up. So, I thought we would, you know, start by talking about types of public funding available to homeschooling families with special needs children, and then why these programs are so different from state to state. Because a lot of times parents will come onto social media and they'll say, this is what I get for my district or my state. And then another parent would say, well, I tried to get that, but I can't. And and so what is, you know, what have you... What is the spectrum? And then why is the spectrum so broad?
Well, first of all, it can be very, very confusing. And one of the things that I would certainly encourage parents, if they haven't already checked out the HSLD website, you can go to www.hslda.org. And we have not only the state laws, what's required for your state to be able to homeschool, but we also have, you know, what you may be able to get as a child or have a parent with a child who has special educational needs. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that I would say is, you know, every homeschooling family, really any child who's school age, and that would generally be in the public school anywhere from 5 to 21, you can have your child be evaluated to determine whether or not they have special educational needs. Now, right. We may talk a little bit later whether that's a good decision, but everyone has the right to an evaluation. And so anyone can get that evaluation. And normally the way in which you would initiate that is you submit a written request to have the school district evaluate child for special educational needs. Mm. They have to act under federal law within 60 days to conduct that evaluation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, COVID has kind of modified how they're conducting some of these evaluations, but everyone is entitled to an evaluation that's free, no cost. It may be more extensive than what you're thinking, though, because they don't necessarily going to focus on, you already may know, say your child is struggling with dyslexia, or perhaps your child has a comprehensive issue, or you know they're on the autism spectrum. Typically, though, the evaluations are going to be comprehensive, evaluation all across the wide range of potential disabilities, and then they will determine whether or not your child is identified as having a disability. And then this is where it kind of gets interesting, because each state is different and they treat students differently. Everyone is entitled to a free, appropriate public education. So everyone can send their child to school. Unfortunately, you know, all the public education across the country is not always going to be the same, but you're entitled to a free, appropriate public education. When you choose a private education, whether a traditional private school or a homeschool program, then that's where it kind of starts to differentiate. And most states provide a lower level of services for non-public school students. Each state gets to determine whether they categorize homeschooling in a non-public school kind of category. And it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, there are about 16 states that you are treated as a private school. You know, so like California, Kentucky, Texas, many of those states will treat you as a private school when you're homeschooling. And in most of those states, you're going to be potentially entitled to some services if your child is identified as having a disability. And then there are a number of homeschool states where you're under a homeschool statute. You're still homeschooling when you're, you know, considered a private school student in those states that I mentioned. But in a homeschool state, there are several states that also provide services for homeschool students, like New York and other states. So about half of the states will provide some level of services if your child is identified. And we're seeing a slight increase in that. One of the things that I would certainly encourage you, like I said earlier, is to check out the HSLDA website. We can give you some insight as to what potential services you could be entitled to as a homeschool student, and those services from the public school system. Again, I think we'll talk a little bit later on about whether that, you know, may or may not be the best decision for you and your family. But that's one option. There are also then a number of states who've kind of set up, and I know you talked about this in your previous podcast and broadcast, that you have a number of states who are kind of doing a kind of like a scholarship, or sometimes they call it a savings account. And most of these are specifically focused on children with special educational needs. Some of them also include maybe children who military family or other ways in which they can qualify for that same educational program. And the general setup of these programs are they use public funds that's deposited into account, and those funds then can be used for approved services or approved providers. And then they could also be used for other things like curriculum or other programs, therapies, and things like that. But again, because it's public funds, you're typically have to follow certain requirements and oversight. Some states actually have the Department of Education managing those accounts. Then there are states like Florida with the Family Empowerment Scholarship. I think you mentioned that last week, but those are actually managed by third party organizations. So again, there's a wide range. And then you have yet other options of public funds. And those would be some of the like charter school or virtual school options.
Right. Yep.
And some of these, you know, they'll provide both education and some services. Mm-hmm. Your child is still considered a private school. I'm sorry, a public school student.
Public school, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you may be, they may be educating in your home.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's very difficult for parents to, you know, well, whether this is a publicly funded program or a privately funded program.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few private programs that, you know, would kind of provide the, you know, the level of funding that you're going to find. So if you start hearing a significant amount of money, that's generally a good idea that that's probably a publicly funded program. Mm. For instance, in Florida, the Empowerment Scholarship Account, generally the base amount is about $9,000.
Yeah.
So that kind of gives you a real brief overview of different options. Again, I think the hybrid, you know, the distance online hybrid programs can be very difficult.
Yes.
And certainly any parent who has questions, you know, it's always a good idea to ask around, ask your local homeschool support group, ask your state organization, talk to, you know, those of us here at HSL Day, obviously you, Peggy, you know, all of us can help, you know, clarify, you know, is this a public program? Is this a private program? And I think going in, it's very helpful for you as a parent to know whether or not these programs are going to be restricting you in how you're educating a child or what you're educating. So, for instance, the scholarship programs, typically you can educate your child every way you want.
Mm-hmm.
They restrict, though, how you spend the money from the program. So, you know, whether you're buying curriculum, whether you're using approved providers or they're going to restrict how that money is spent, but they're not going to necessarily restrict how you educate your child.
Right.
With the distance learning programs or the hybrid programs, the charter schools, those kinds of programs, they restrict, obviously, how the child is educated as well.
Yes.
So, so again, that we kind of range of, you know, kind of oversight, restrictions in all those programs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a trade-off because like you said, there's usually more funding in those more restricted environments and less funding. But again, like Florida, you know, talking to them last week, that up to $9,000 on, you know, just about anything that you can put in for a request if you have an explanation as to why you need it. It's just depends on the program.
Right. And it also depends on the state and how they've set up their program. So Florida's is a very broad, I think probably one of the leading the nation as far as just wide open. And I think Florida has seen the fact that, you know, not every child is going to be able to succeed in a public school environment. And, you know, sometimes giving parents the flexibility to be involved in making some of those decisions on how to best meet the child's needs in the long run is beneficial for the family, for the child, and for the state.
They
spend well more than $9,000 trying to educate a child with special educational needs in the public school.
Right. And then they're spending funding past 18 to do even more follow-up work because they couldn't get it all in the, you know, the 11th or 12th grade. So, yeah, we see a lot of that. And so it is beneficial to every party involved.
Right.
Yeah. So what are some of the pros or advantages of public funding programs and what they provide to families who have students that have special educational needs?
Right. Well, so obviously, you know, parents who are homeschooling children with special educational needs is a challenge. And, you know, as a parent, trying to do that privately is extremely difficult. If you look on average, the national cost for homeschooling parents is about $300 for them. $300 to $600 is about the average that they spend normally on homeschooling. But if you have a child with special educational needs, that cost is significantly higher than that because obviously your child often needs maybe different evaluations. They may need accommodations. They may need therapies or speech services or a number of other things. And so it can be very cost prohibitive. So some of the benefits, obviously, of these programs is it takes some of that burden off of the parent. Mm-hmm. It does provide additional resources that you may not have.
Right.
I've talked with a number of families who do have great insurance, and mm-hmm. some of their insurance will provide some of the therapies mm-hmm. and services. But many of the insurance providers, if you can get these services through the public school mm-hmm. for free,
exactly.
you know, they push you in that direction.
Yep.
And so mm-hmm. Sometimes these scholarship accounts provide an alternative where you're not having to send your child to the public school or bring them to the public school for the evaluation. You can choose right. who you want to use. I mean, mm-hmm. that's one of the greatest benefits is,
yes.
you know, while you have to use approved providers, you get much more of a say in who may be providing mm-hmm. therapy or services to your child.
Right. Versus the public school, going to the public school, you just get who they have available.
Right. And they're not always going to necessarily be working with you.
No, no. They rarely work with the parents. It's mostly right. just the child. Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, I've talked with parents who say, oh, you know, I want to participate in the services that my child's receiving so that I can do more at home.
Right.
You know, I want to be able to you know, do speech yeah. services or, mm-hmm. you know, maybe PT or OT mm-hmm. services at home. And they're eager to be able to learn. And very few public school programs will allow a parent to sit through those kinds of sessions. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing a private program, you're a private therapist through these publicly funded programs, oftentimes right. you can be a participant in that. And then also, you know, that helps you in helping your child, you know, throughout the week and throughout the year, more than just the therapy services that they may be receiving from the approved provider. So again, I think we've talked about the financial resources or publicly funded programs, right. the flexibility that many of them have, and, you know, the more involvement that you as a parent can be in those programs.
Right. Yeah, it is very restricted. And I don't think a lot of parents understand until I usually have to have a phone conversation explained to them that when the school is doing therapy versus you doing therapy through funding that's provided for therapy, the school's ideal of your child graduating from that therapy program is that they can function as their peers in the classroom. And once they reach that level, they cut that program until your child falls down below that percentile again. And so it's this constant up and down, your child, you know, getting to a certain level, but not increasing beyond that. They just get put back in until they fail again. Right. And it's not set up well.
Right. Well, I think a lot of the public school officials, you know, again, they're trying to manage and provide services to a wide range of,
exactly.
of children.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not as motivated as you as a parent are going to be in mm-hmm. Seeing your child. I mean, I'm not trying to minimize public school officials, but they're trying to manage services for, you know, a large population.
They have to draw a line somewhere, right. and that's just where they draw it. And right. legally, that's all the IDEA law requires. So yeah. they're mm-hmm. they're meeting the standard.
Right. They just need to provide an appropriate education, not necessarily an excellent or...
Yes, exactly. That's why that word is in there. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So we have a couple questions from our viewers. You willing to dive into that?
Sure.
Okay. So Lisa from YouTube asked, do you know anything about Texas homeschool advice? What I should know? I'm new.
Sure. Well, Texas is, as I mentioned earlier, one of those states where you're operating as a private school. And there's a really important case in Texas called the Leeper case. Mm-hmm. It was decided in the 80s. There were a number of cases that were kind of consolidated. We joined the Leeper case as a private attorney already fighting that case. But that Leeper case basically said that parents who are educating their children at home are to be treated as private schools, and the state cannot regulate or cannot restrict private education. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of freedom, a significant amount of freedom in Texas than, say, compared to New York. One of the things I would certainly encourage you to do is to find a local homeschool support group. If your child is already in the public school, then obviously there's some steps that you'll need to take to withdraw them from the public school and to begin homeschooling. But normally, there's no approval, there's no notification, there's no testing that you're required to do. Mm-hmm. You have the flexibility to design and to organize and operate your home education program as you see fit. And there's also no limitations or restrictions on, you know, homeschooling a child with special educational needs. Mm-hmm. Most states don't add any additional requirements if your child has special educational needs, but there are going to be a few states that have, you know, just either testing requirements that you may need to be aware of or other things.
Right.
Texas doesn't have any of that. And so you're going to have a lot more freedom and flexibility. Mm-hmm. I think Lisa, you know, mentioned that your child did go to public school through seventh. And
they left due to COVID.
Yeah, right. And then obviously I think you either you're now online. I'm not quite sure if you're now online or if you have... if you've completely left online public school as well. So if you do need to completely extricate you and your son, then we can certainly talk about that. And that's really what HSLD is for. It is to help each individual family, regardless of where you're at, to be able to help walk you through what you need to do and get you kind of started on a successful home education program. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think Lisa did say that she's completely left.
She left. She did say that they're still in the middle of evaluation. So that's something to just know that as a parent, you know, this is what TJ was talking about before as a homeschool parent. Those evaluations and those IEPs a lot of times will continue on once even you withdrawn your student.
Right.
And so that's kind of tricky. I know in some states, when you withdraw, the IEP stops, but sometimes it's not. And I know we had a question from Cindy here, too, on YouTube. She said, I'm trying to withdraw my son of his IEP, but they're not returning my phone call.
Sure. Yeah. So a lot of the times what I would suggest in that situation is put things in writing. Yeah. So, you know, communicate, whether it's through letter or it's probably better right now through COVID to do that via email, and communicate with the CSE or Committee of Special Education, either the chairperson or whoever your contact is for the IEP, and make it clear and notify them that, you know, you are going to meet your child's needs privately. You know, and that's a good thing to kind of keep in mind when you are withdrawing from an IEP. Sometimes the public school officials, they kind of get it in their mind, as I mentioned earlier, that, you know, how can you as a parent, you know, hope to be able to educate your child at home? You know, you're not, you know, qualified, or you don't have the specialized training that our special education teachers do. And I would certainly disagree with that. I think you as a parent absolutely can provide a great educational program. And you have what's most important, and that is a desire to see your child successful and to be educated and to have their needs met. So it's often a good idea when you are withdrawing from an IEP to notify the school district that you are going to have your child's needs met privately. You don't have to explain to them how that's going to be done.
Exactly. They may ask.
Right. And it could be, you know, through like sped homeschooling, through HSLD special needs consultants. You can be getting resources and help from, you know, all different, you know, areas all across the country.
Right.
And maybe you have also maybe someone that you see on a quarterly basis or a regular basis for your child as well. So withdrawing that's typically how I would do it. Make sure that you're submitting written notice telling them that you're going to be withdrawing. Now, Peggy, as you mentioned earlier, each state kind of treats it a little bit differently, but federal law basically says that if your child has been identified as having a disability, the school district is legally required to continue to offer services. And so that's oftentimes why every year, usually, you know, at the time of the annual evaluation, you'll get a contact or a letter.
Right.
And they will say, hey, we're going to have the annual reevaluation.
Exactly.
So
that scares parents sometimes.
Very common for that to happen. You can formally completely withdraw yourself from the IEP. Normally, depending on the state, they may want you to sign like a form that says you're formally declining services.
Right.
A lot of parents are not quite sure whether that's the you know, best thing for them to do. What I can say is, you know, even though you may formally completely withdraw your child from an IEP, if things change and you make a decision, you know, maybe a year or two down the road, and you want to kind of reinitiate the process, you can do so simply by submitting that notice requesting a written evaluation, as I mentioned earlier. So it's not going to remove these services completely, but it will kind of get them off your back and that annual requirement. Now, most families, I'm sure, are probably familiar with a triennial evaluation. So every 3 years.
Every 3 years,
And if that's not done, then typically that also is an indication that it's going to kind of phase out or time out. And so some parents, they may be time for that triennial evaluation. And so they may say, well, I never got any further contact. Well, if you don't do that triennial evaluation, then that will kind of phase out your child's identification. And so that may be a reason why you're not getting any further contact.
That's good information to know, because I know Lisa had asked about that, about the 3 years. And I know we've heard from some parents that just over the years of having these conversations, parents are so scared to refuse the services, like the school's going to come after them, like they're harming their child. But you have every right as a parent, am I right on this, to say,
yeah, absolutely,
I don't agree with this.
Yeah. And so no school district can force you or require you to continue to receive services or continue to be evaluated. In fact, just last week, I had to contact a school district in New York that was actually, I'm sorry, wasn't in New York, but it happens often enough in New York. But I had to send them some information because they were trying to say that, no, you had to continue with your evaluation. They wanted to actually transition their IEP to an IESP, or IEP stands for Individualized Educational Plan. IESP is an Individualized Education Service Plan, and it's an IESP is for non-public or homeschool students. And so they were trying to force them to continue that. The family said, no, we don't want to do that. We want to do a private evaluation and meet our child's needs privately. And the school district wouldn't let them go. So we contacted them and pointed out that they have a right to stop and to decline that. A number of years ago, we ended up taking a couple of these cases across the country where school districts were trying to force parents to continue to do this. And we won those cases. We actually got the U.S. Department of Education to write a amicus brief or friend of the court brief in our favor, in support of our position that, no, you can't be forced to continue to get these services. And I would, again, I don't want to alarm any parents, but it is really important for you to say, hey, we're going to meet our child's needs privately. That will often cut off any kind of attempt by the school district to say, well, you know, you're not meeting your child's needs. You know, do we need to refer this to, you know, some CPS agency or CPS? Something.
Yes, exactly.
You know? So we have seen that on an occasional basis. It's not a regular occurrence, but I find that if you do inform the school district that you're going to meet your child's needs privately, that often eliminates, you know, even that remote possibility.
That's great. Yeah. Definitely. It's nice to have that wording for some parents who don't know exactly what to say in those instances. So we've talked about the pros and we're kind of moving towards the cons, but we have one question from a viewer I thought that we would start that off with, and then we'll maybe talk about some of the other cons with this or disadvantages that you know, come with these advantages. It's just the way it goes. But Brandon on YouTube had asked, what are your thoughts on the current push in Pennsylvania for public funding for homeschoolers? Should we be wary of attached government intervention if something like this worked well in other states? So I'm not familiar with Pennsylvania. Who's behind it and all of that? I'm assuming you probably are, TJ.
Yeah, I mean, every year there seems to be somewhat of a push for publicly funded. In most of these situations, what we find are it's a movement towards more, control or oversight. Because when you're using public funds, then obviously the state has a responsibility to ensure that public funds are being spent in a way that's, meaningful and
and
that there is accountability for that. I would say the cons typically in publicly funded programs are that there is more control. There's more oversight. Now, some states, as I said, have, found a way to kind of balance that and provide a lot of flexibility But usually, like I said, the number one requirement is how the money is spent. So whether you have to submit receipts and document what you're purchasing or use approved providers or approved services, there is going to be some control. Again, it varies from state to state on what exactly is going to be necessary in the program, the publicly funded program, but there is going to be always more additional requirements. In some states, there's assessment options or other oversight. We have seen even states where there's regular teacher contact. In other words, that they, you know, particularly on like a charter or online school program, they often want regular public school teacher contact. And in some of these situations, I had a parent one time get contacted by their child's online teacher and say, oh, I need to talk to your child. We're going to be doing basically an hour a week conversations. And oh, by the way, mom, you cannot be on the phone. And so, of course, that alarmed mom that, you know, why is the teacher having these private conversations with her teacher, and she couldn't be on the phone with her. And so, you know, again, you have a lot more oversight, a lot more regulation, a lot more control in these situations. And then, like I said, they kind of restrict perhaps how those funds are. The discussion about the Pennsylvania funding, I think, is again, what we're seeing increase. Some of it is due to COVID. Some of it is something that has always been done. But I think because so many school districts and states are seeing parents who are looking for alternatives and have found private homeschooling as a potential option for them, some of these states and some legislators are very concerned that, oh my goodness, you know, we're not going to know how these children are doing. You know, how are they, you know, progressing? Are they falling through the cracks? I think most parents who've made the decision to homeschool them, you know, realize this is not a, it's not a, you have to have a commitment. It's not an easy decision. And, you know, there are some parents who will try homeschooling and they realize, you know, it's not for us. But I think the vast majority of parents who've made that commitment, made that leap, you know, it is a challenge, but I think it's absolutely something that's worth it. And, you know, obviously both of us are here to help families who are making that plunge to be able to homeschool their children. So again, that's kind of the, maybe some of the cons. And, you know, the publicly funded programs, again, I think the increase that we're seeing them is really an attempt by either public school officials or state officials to kind of entice people back into the system in some form or other. You know, and again, I'm not trying to be necessarily critical. I'm just saying that that's, I think, one way in which they're seeing as a possible option to entice people back in. For those parents who are looking for more flexibility, more choices, typically you're going to find that in a non-public or you know, home education program.
Yeah, that is very true. And we've been hearing a lot of mixed things from our community still, you know, trying, people have been going in and out since COVID started and not really, you know, finding what works really well. And it's hard to be in that middle place when in it, it, when you get offered funding and I'll teach your child, it's so enticing. But I am often reminded by parents who have homeschooled the long run. They said, yeah, I remember though what it was like when my kids were in school. And that's what reminds me to keep trying, you know, on those hard days when everything is going wrong at home. So, because we forget so easily that, sometimes it's just easier to not take all the help, and our kids don't have as much anxiety and other things with all the things that the hoops that we have to jump through. And they just aren't made to do that, especially our special needs learners. So, so important. You know, can you share any stories? I guess you've shared some that illustrate maybe the pros and cons that you've seen over the years and parents using these types of programs, if there's, you have a couple more that you haven't shared already.
Sure. Well, you know, so I do have the opportunity to talk with families who have found their local school district and their state does provide services that meets their child's needs. Mm-hmm. And I can't stress enough the fact that if you're considering getting services through your local public school district, talk with your local homeschool leaders, talk with your local support groups, because that will give you an idea, not only maybe, you know, in looking at what HSLD can provide as far as what you're legal, you know, mm-hmm. what you're legally entitled to, what may be the options out for there, but you can find more about the practical side of things. Right. Are the services really going to, you know, meet our needs? Are they going to be beneficial? Mm-hmm. How flexible is the state with the provision of services? Mm-hmm.
Well, it may even vary from district to district too.
Yeah, you know, it can. Mm-hmm. Right. So for instance, in New York, homeschool students are entitled to special education services through the school district, and they are provided a much higher level than in other states. Mm-hmm. Both non-public and homeschool students are kind of equally able and eligible to receive services. However, there are some challenges with, in order to receive services in the public school system, you have to be fully vaccinated or immunized. And that mm-hmm. that may be an issue with a child who has a disability. Right. Some parents yeah. may have found that their child is allergic or has mm-hmm. a contraindication to some vaccinations or immunizations.
Right. Yep.
And New York has done away with all religious exemptions. Mm-hmm. It makes it extremely difficult to get a medical exemption in those situations. Right. So, those kinds of situations and unique issues are, again, something that I would encourage you to talk with us here at HSLDA. Mm-hmm. I would say that I've talked with a number of families who, like I said, have found that, you know, while they're entitled to services, those services that are being provided are not really, it's taking more time for them to bring the child to the public school, to transportation mm-hmm. back and forth. For 45 minutes of services, right. 1 day a week or 2 days a mm-hmm. week. And it's just, it's not effective for their child and their needs. Right. So, and then there's also families who have used programs like Arizona's, Scholar Empowerment
Scholarship
Program, mm-hmm. Scholarship mm-hmm. Program, or Florida's Family Empowerment Scholarship Program, mm-hmm. That it does provide a, amazing, scope of resources that they wouldn't mm-hmm. be able to do without those programs. And it has allowed them to not only provide a high-quality home education program, but it also allows mm-hmm. them to meet their child's special educational needs in ways that they wouldn't necessarily be able to do. So,
right.
again, I think it just depends on what state you're in, what school mm-hmm. district you're in a lot of the times. We're here to try to help you in understanding. But you know, there are even some other alternatives that I think you are, kind of wanting to talk about and something that we really haven't talked about. And that is, are there any private options
right, to get services? Exactly. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so HSLDA has a private service. So why don't we talk a little bit about that, TJ? And then we'll talk a little bit about HSLDA as a whole, too, sure. after you talk about the compassion grants.
Yeah, so HSLDA Compassion is something that we have been working with for many, many, many years. So over 27 years, HSLDA has, worked to provide HSLDA Compassion. And the motto of HSLDA Compassion is helping homeschoolers through hard times. Mm-hmm. And so you have the ability through HSLDA Compassion to help families. And this is entirely private. This is not publicly, no public funds. These are mm-hmm. private funds. Private individuals have donated to HSLD Compassion. Most of these families are homeschooling families themselves. And the HSLD Compassion is able to provide funds for curriculum, special education needs services, mm-hmm. disaster relief, or even, emergency assistance.
Yeah.
We have specific funds that are set up for widows or widowers. Mm-hmm. We have funds that are set up for military families, special needs families, single parents, and then, you know, even just a general emergency fund or disaster relief fund for situations like the tornado or hurricanes you know, the fires in California. All of those situations, through HSL Day Compassion, we've been able to reach out and minister to families who've had a need. Maybe they've lost all their curriculum, or their child has special educational needs, and they're looking for funds to be able to conduct a private evaluation. They don't want to seek that evaluation through the public school system, just because of the challenges in that. Mm-hmm. So HSLDA, like I said, for the past 27 years, has been able to give away millions of dollars that is raised privately. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we generate all the, you know, we donate all the staff time that's necessary. We try to do everything possible so that 100% or nearly 100% of all those donated dollars are then passed along to families who have these types of needs. So I would certainly encourage you to take a look at it. This is something that you think that maybe perhaps your family would benefit from. You can go to hslday.org and click on our link for HSLDA Compassion. And you can talk with a number of our great compassion ladies there who can walk you through some of the options that might be available to you. You know, again, it's the motto of HSLDA Compassion is really to help any homeschooler through the hard times, regardless of what the circumstances that they're facing. We're wanting to try to provide an alternative other than maybe public funded. Again, there are some great public funded programs, but not necessarily going to meet every family's needs in the way that you want to see.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I learned that because I had a representative in from Utah yet last week on our show, and their program, even though it was approved by the state, it is a publicly, or it's not publicly, but it's a privately funded, so they go out and seek donors to fund that program, although the state has approved for this to happen, and that's the reason that, and that's a brand new program. So it might be a new model that we'll be starting to see more of as individuals pour themselves into that. I know she's working really hard trying to help families that are struggling, and it's I told her it's a good work. Because
absolutely.
There's so much need out there. So then tell us a little bit more about HSLDA and the benefits and services provided for families, especially struggling learners, so that our parents know just what they can benefit from by being a member of HSLDA.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, obviously, most people who have heard, and we've kind of talked about some of the legal side of things. As a state contact attorney, you know, I provide legal assistance on what is legally required for you to begin homeschooling, how to withdraw and extricate yourself from the public school, and many of the legal questions that may come up in kind of your decision to homeschool. We have attorneys on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Typically, I'm on call Tuesday evening. So if there were an emergency caseworker situation, you know, that might be something that I would get a phone call on. We have backup attorneys, and we make sure that we have attorneys on call, like I said, 24 hours, 7 days a week. But besides the legal aspect, you know, I think what's even more important is the type of support that we provide to families who need more practical assistance, particularly families with special educational needs. We have, I think, four or five special needs consultants.
I think five now.
We just had one more hire that we just hired recently. And these are ladies who provide a lot of individualized assistance, information, just talking with parents who are trying to homeschool a child with special educational needs. They're able to provide information, support, resources. We even rent out evaluations that you can do at home, all kinds of different ways in which we try to support families and really a wide range of special educational needs. We've got a number of reading consultants, those who are familiar with a wide range of special educational disabilities. that we can point you to. In addition to our special needs consultants, we also have early years consultants. We have high school consultants. Mm-hmm. We have individuals who can talk with you at kind of every step of the way, whether you're looking for curriculum, whether you're trying to prepare your child's GPA and their transcript, mm-hmm. Preparing them to get into college, or, you know, for employment. Regardless of what your question may be, we have consultants who can provide some assistance in that. Yeah. And then also, HS Holiday sends out both a weekly email to anyone. It's free. If you're mm-hmm. interested in signing up, you can sign up and get a weekly email on kind of the latest issues that are going across the country. Mm-hmm. Yep. We have a quarterly magazine that we send out. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of great topics and articles that are relevant to homeschooling families. And then also, as an HS Holiday member, you're also helping us not only do all those things and maybe providing support to you directly, but you're also providing kind of broader advocacy and support for homeschooling on a much broader level. So we work very closely with state organizations, local homeschool leaders all across the country to make sure that we're protecting homeschooling freedom in each and every state. So we help monitor legislation on both the state and a federal level. We work with homeschool leaders when either negative bills or positive bills come up that are could impact homeschooling freedom. So we see bills like trying to lower the compulsory attendance age. A couple of years ago, DC wanted to lower it to 2 years and 9 months. Now there's a lot of reasons why they wanted to do that, but you know, mm-hmm. we kind of watch those kinds of issues. We also, you know, try to advocate for greater homeschooling freedom mm-hmm. to give more flexibility to parents. We do look for programs like some of the, you know, publicly funded programs. We want to make sure that they're not going to negatively impact homeschoolers mm-hmm. and then also be a positive support maybe to families who would benefit from them.
Right.
And provide them with as much flexibility as possible. So we do all those things. Also, you know, we're very involved in research on homeschooling, both in helping encourage research on homeschooling, compiling mm-hmm. research on homeschooling. It can be very helpful when we're dealing with legislation because legislators want to know, well, how are homeschoolers doing? Mm-hmm. How do they compare maybe to public school students? And then, obviously, media, you know, we've all seen articles probably due to the increase in homeschooling because of COVID. I think mm-hmm. a lot of families are mm-hmm. looking.
Yeah.
And so we are very involved in kind of media communication. We also deal with negative, you know, media. So you may remember a year or so again in Harvard, Professor Elizabeth Bartholet came out and said that, you know, she believed homeschooling should, you know, should be illegal or regulated. And so, you know, we get involved in those situations, mm-hmm. reminding people that, you know, we have seen such a tremendous success within the homeschooling movement. And much of it is due to the fact that there's flexibility, that parents get to be in control and get to decide what's best for their children and for their family. So, mm-hmm. You know, even little things such as your HS Holiday membership can, you know, provide other benefits, save you money. You know, my wife, for instance, uses her HS Holiday membership as a teacher discount at like a number of different stores. You mm-hmm. can get discounts for insurance, hotels,
mm-hmm.
So many different things.
Lots of different
things. That's really anything to do with homeschooling. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to probably see us here at HS Holiday involved at some level. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we couldn't do everything without, you know, strong state homeschool organizations, homeschool support groups, and leaders.
Exactly.
You know, a lot of parents are providing, and obviously you, Peggy, and SPED Homeschooling and other programs that are meant to help and assist families who are homeschooling their children. Mm-hmm. It's a cooperative effort where I think we're all advocating because we've seen, you know, honestly, we've seen the benefit in our own families. You know, I was homeschooled much of my life. You know, my wife and I are homeschooling our own 7 children. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you've been homeschooling. You know, all of these, you know, things have had an impact. And, you know, one of the reasons why we do what we do here at HS Holiday.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yes. And Faith Behrens, who is one of the struggling learner specialists for HSLBA, is actually on the board of directors for Sped Homeschool. Right. So we have a great partnership, and we are so excited that HSLBA actually provided us a grant for this coming summer for our first family camp that we're going to be doing in Minnesota, and with partnering with the Ministry of Johnny and Friends.
Oh, great.
And so that's going to, the funding that we're getting from HSLBA is actually going to help us to pay for our volunteer coordinator, which we're going to have 70 volunteers at this camp, because we're going to have one-on-one buddies for every child.
Okay.
And also for the family coordinator, because every family that comes in has an interview, and we go through the process of what are your food allergies? You know, it is a complicated effort to have a family camp for 20 families. But we're super excited to be able to offer that first special needs family camp in partnership with Johnny and Friends, because we're hoping to grow that ministry out. I know Steve Demme, who is the chairman of our board, has been working with that ministry for years, and has helped us to bridge that that partnership. So,
well, it sounds like exciting opportunity and program, and can't wait to hear how that goes. And I'm sure it'd be great time for those families.
Yes, yeah, and we have HSLDA to thank for some of that funding. So we're so thankful, but definitely do check out what TJ was talking about and the membership benefits that come with that. You know, a lot of parents are just needing that somebody to reassure them, to walk alongside them, and then also, you know, I never thought I would use HSLDA services until my son graduated and then went to Florida to go to trade school, and they asked for his required, you know, attendance, because in Florida, of course, that's one of the requirements, or was, and we lived in Minnesota, so we never tracked it. Right. And so all I had to do was say, well, we can get you in touch with HSLBA. And they went, oh no, we're fine. You guys didn't even have to do anything. Just your name and, you know, saying we're going to connect with you was enough. But it is a reassurance as a parent, knowing that, you know, if I do have an issue, I've got somebody backing me up that knows a whole lot more than I do.
Right. Well, and, you know, I certainly appreciate all the hard work that many, you know, parents do, obviously, in the educating of their children and those who've gone before. Because, you know, Florida, we do see this occasionally when you're, you know, so your child is going to school in another state, and a lot of those states or the colleges or the, you know, vo-tech school may have some questions. Well, you know, they're saying, well, you need to have this, because they're thinking of the requirements of their state. And
which is good to even know that, because some don't.
Well, you know, 15, 20 years ago was much different.
Right.
You know, situation even then. We've seen a tremendous change over the years, and a lot of it again has been those pioneers and families and students, state leaders, obviously HSLDA getting involved from time to time in making sure that they are educated about what is homeschooling. Yes, it's a legal option, and you know, it is certainly can be an excellent educational program that is, should be treated as any other high school graduate or any other, you know, student who's applying to college or these programs. So, it's great when you hear those stories, and glad that your son was able to get through that program.
And it was a good first away from home for him, and then he came back and went to college. But still, it's good to have a trade. Well, thank you so much, TJ, for taking time tonight to share with us just all the wisdom. Definitely, it was important information that our community needed to know about. And just thank you for all that you're doing to support homeschooling families.
Well, my pleasure, Peggy, and glad to be on with you. And certainly, trust has been helpful. And please let us know how we continue to help and support you and the families that you serve.
Yeah, definitely. We'll do that. And I also want to thank our audience for joining us on this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. This is just one of the many resources we have at Sped Homeschool available to families. We do have the number one special needs homeschooling blog. And actually tomorrow, the new blog that's coming out is written by a parent who used the funding in Arizona. TJ probably knows her, Allison Natalia. She wrote an article. She has 6 kids with special needs. So you can imagine the funding that they needed for services for 6 kids all having those learning struggles. Next week, we're going to be continuing this conversation, and we're going to be talking about how different families use public funding programs. And so we're going to have 3 parents on with us who are just going to share their experiences and what they found, maybe the hiccups, the benefits, and, you know, kind of all that in between. And so we just encourage you to join us again then. So I hope you can join me for that episode. It will be the final one for 2021. And then we're going to be switching to an afternoon format. I need my Tuesday evenings. This has been almost 4 years running straight. So I'm looking forward to some lunchtime chats instead. but thanks again, TJ. And thank you to all of you for joining us. And we'll see you in here next time on Empowering Homeschool Conversations. Good night, everyone.
Night.
God kept calling my heart. Like, I just knew he was my safe place.
I hope people don't walk away going, wow, you're really awesome. More than like, wow, Jesus is really interesting. And he's really awesome.
Everybody on this planet is dealing with some sort of what if.
How does that one courageous decision affect the whole world?
A ship in harbor is safe, but that's not what ships are built for.
If you were encouraged by what you just heard, please search Trevor Talks on your favorite podcast platform or lifeaudio.com.